Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And sitting across the table from me, our good friend, Hugh Weber, who is host of the Potluck Society, among many other hats that he wears. But you can find the Potluck Society wherever you download your podcasts, or you can listen online at listen.sdpb.org. Hey, Hugh, welcome.
If it's Tuesday, I'm here on In the Moment, right?
That's right. If you're Tuesday, you're right here. And I'm wondering why we don't eat food.
It's a great question. I'll start bringing bars.
All right. Let's bring bars to every one of these. All right. But our food is really ideas, not to be cheesy, but that's kind of what we're talking about. So bring an idea to pass. How is the pot? It's been 6 months.
You know, it is settling into what we hoped it would be. I had a conversation last week with Kara Hetland, who leads radio here on Public Radio, and I think it's figuring out what it wants to grow up to be, which is to tell these stories that may not elevate or rise in their fullness to In the Moment and what this is a statewide program, but they're ordinary people that still are doing extraordinary things. And I think it started to self-propagate itself. So I get more calls of inquiry than I did 6 months ago, which is also helpful and exciting. But this week is a special week, and it's something that's meaningful to me personally, but also I think to the region. I made a trip last week to the University of South Dakota to sit down with the Ambassadors of Excellence, which is a program that's been around for over 30 years. I actually went as a middle schooler to the camp, and this is the third year I've gone back as an adult. The camp is run by a gentleman named Heath Weber, of no relation. We validate that every time. No shared family trees. But this Ambassadors of Excellence program is really built to provide a learning experience for the gifted high school students in the state. And it, as importantly, to provide a safe and supportive environment for them to learn and explore and discover. So I sat down with them this year for about 3 hours. We did letter pressing. My 8-year-old daughter did button making with them that said change makers. But we were really talking about this idea of being the change that they wish to see in the world, or more explicitly, being the change makers, the active role of leading change. We talked about design and networks and story. And at the end, we did something that felt a little risky, which is that we did interviews right in front of their peers. So 104 high school students were in the room. I invited people that had thought about the community that they wanted to focus on to come down and join us. And as we were wrapping up that workshop, I sat down with three. I asked them about their community, and that might be geographic, the city they live in, affinity, a hobby they have, or identity being how they see themselves, but what dreams they had for that community. So we're going to hear from Maddie from Vermilion, James from Brookings, and Claire from Pier. So we're talking about community. Tell me a little bit about the community that you had in mind when you were thinking about the questions.
I was also doing the geographical sense, and Vermilion is a pretty small town, but it is still pretty busy all the time. Yeah. And I thought that a good change to make would be to disband the hierarchy of like power families, just because poverty is such a huge issue in Vermilion. And there's very little in between. It's either, you know, really powerful families or families that are struggling. Yeah. And disbanding those power families would mean less struggles for people that need it. And essentially, it would be similar to, if you ever heard the quote, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. That's how I would see community is one big chain. And if we have people that are struggling and we're just leaving them in the dust, then we're not going to progress as a community.
Personally, I see a lot of people like in Brookings who don't have a lot of ambition. They're sort of like resigned to their fate. Like, I feel like at least a part of South Dakota is sort of like okay with not being notable and being in the backwoods, which is like fine, but I see it sort of dragging down a lot of other people who are maybe more ambitious. Well, I'd like to see those people who have that ambition make an impact and see them go out into the world and be able to do their dreams.
There's a lot of people who are just kind of kept quiet and afraid to speak up about stuff, and honestly, that was me up until eighth grade, where I decided, hey, I'm gonna like get out there more. So I decided to be in the eighth grade play. It wasn't good, but it was still fun. But I just would like people to get up there and be expressive as necessary. I don't know, just to have people be brave and just kind of get up there and show everybody what they can do and what they have to offer.
What responsibility do you have to drive this change? What can you do?
Be open and accepting as possible and be as weird as I can. Just see like, hey, normal isn't necessarily the most exciting thing you could possibly be.
I love everything about these three and the other 101 in the room. I think they have such a unique sense of self, and it left me really hopeful. Even in the grandiose or mundane of what they were focused on, it left me really hopeful about them and this place.
So here's one of the stereotypes that people have about middle school and high school students, I think, adults who maybe aren't in contact with kids as often, is that they all want to fit in. They all want to just not be noticed, go under the radar. And I don't find that's the case, and certainly not the case with these three. You don't walk around talking about disbanding the hierarchy of power families in Vermilion unless you're afraid to make a little stir.
That's right. I think there's something about them that they may choose to fit in, but there's this deep desire to have permission or freedom to explore the edges of who they are. You know, I got this sense that even as they were answering questions, they weren't looking for validation from that group, but they were looking for reassurance that it was okay to explore the edges, which is pretty thrilling, but also can be awful terrifying for us as adults as well.
Maybe that is fitting in. Maybe this group or this generation says that's how you fit in, is to be notable and to do something. That could be a sea change, yeah, in how young people sort of see their role in the world. That could be generational.
Yeah. I had a conversation this morning with an extraordinary designer from Bismarck. And he said that his dad, now he's 15 years into his career, still says that, you know, when they get together, maybe you should find a good steady job. And he's like, this one's been pretty steady for 15 years. I mean, I think it may be a generational transition that we're in the midst of, and that these high school students maybe are the change itself. Maybe they are literally the change that we've all been wishing for. You know, interestingly enough, Heath noted in his longer interview, which you're just going to hear a little bit of here, that the camp has been around for 34 years. The ambassador's program a little shorter, but the camp for 34 years, and he's been to 31 of those years, which he doesn't even, to me, doesn't strike me as someone who could be 31, much less have attended 31 years of a camp. But I asked him why he keeps coming back, and he gives me more than I was expecting in his answer.
I think, you know, in the beginning, it was because I, like they've said earlier, it was a place of sameness, you know, that I was that weird kid who, I bought the space shuttle flight manual. We had a good family friend who ran the Walden Books in Sioux Falls, and I wanted to fly the space shuttle. That was my thing. And so I learned how to fly the space shuttle. I had a great gifted teacher. And so there were other kids who were nerdy like that. They wanted to fly the space shuttle. they wanted to, you know, they were curious about the insides of sharks, or they wanted to learn how the brain worked. Or and so that's what kept me coming back initially. And then as I started my career as a music educator, the powerful piece of this show that was attached to the ambassador part was what drove my early career. And then as I've gotten older, I've realized that it's so much more than just the show. It becomes so much about their discovery, the discovery of themselves, the discovery of how they can change their communities. And then finally, I think in this last 5 or 6 years, you know, kids come and they say, it's just such a great place and it's so safe. And this staff that I have now that I work with have really worked hard to develop among these people the fact that camp exists everywhere. It doesn't have to just exist in Vermilion, South Dakota for 2 weeks at the end of July. It can be an open, welcoming society wherever they are, that they have that that power within them to change their community.
Camp is everywhere.
We can only hope for it. I mean, when he said it, it was this extremely reassuring and empowering thing. And he was saying it truthfully for himself, but the nods in the room of 104 heads saying like, oh, wow.
Right.
You know, it doesn't look like it could be in Milbank or Woonsocket or Menno or Mobridge, but maybe it can be.
Yeah, right. So I want to know, I'm going to push you in the direction that I want to go.
Yeah, let's
which
go.
Is you talked to them about being the change makers. What do you say? What does a change maker mean in this context? And how do they receive that message?
I think change is often seen as painful, whether it's in a personal career or in a corporate sense or in a community, because it's something that's done to us, or it's focused on the negative side of change of what it is that you want to change. What I really focus on in these types of conversations, and it's true whether it's high school students or, you know, corporate culture, is what do they actually want to see be different? You know, what is the dream? Because it's one thing to say, I want things to be more open, but what does that dream look like when realized? And frankly, and I asked in one of these clips, what is the responsibility then of that individual that has a sense of what that dream or vision is to realize it? Because when it's something you're doing actively, when it's something that you have that picture in your head, it's a whole lot easier to stay up all night or to bear the criticism or to feel a little bit outside the norm if you know where you're headed. So often we stand at point A and we know we want to go to point B, but we have no idea where it is or what it looks like. And so we just wander. And that is a lonely, isolating, and often unfulfilling prospect. It's a path leading to nowhere. But if we have a sense of where we're going, I think there's a whole lot more optimism that can be built into that. And secondarily, then you can build a group of people around you. If you know what it is that you actually are looking to build, it's a whole lot easier process to build a team to support it.
And the student from Brookings, who said so many people around him are sort of resigned to their fate in not being notable. And so then there's a sense of mastery or empowerment or self-determination, too, that says you don't have to do that. Is that part of
That's right.
what you heard from?
So, yeah, one of the things I really encourage people in general, yourself included, and you probably have this, but is to define a signature question, something that you are insanely curious about, willing to ask anyone about, and also willing to listen to the answer. And so when I followed up with him and asked him specifically about what responsibility he has, he mentioned that he worked in service industry. I don't remember if it was a grocery store or a restaurant, but he said, maybe I just need to get a signature question and just ask literally everyone that comes through so that I can spark a little something in them and have them think bigger about what they're doing, but also to inspire myself. And I think that's a small change. That's waking up and deciding I'm not going to ask the small talk about the weather. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask people what they're passionate about and see what happens after I ask 100 or 1,000 people.
Give me an example. What's a signature question? How do you develop it in a minute?
So for me, I talk very specifically about what am I curious about? What am I passionate about? What do I most need? Mm-hmm. And the question I ask almost endlessly when I sit down with people, it's a good starter, is what are you excited about? What's keeping you up at night? What are you thinking about as you fall asleep? And sometimes it's anxieties and I push them towards a more positive thing of like, what are you eager about? What are you excited about tomorrow? People have something, you know, it may be their garden or their little blue delivery van or whatever it might be. But I think it begins to push people towards the narrative of the future and the narrative of optimism and possibility, as opposed to all the problems that we have. There are plenty of problems to focus on. But when we focus on possibility, I think only positive things can happen.
Hugh Weber, Potluck Society. If you like this conversation, there's a lot more waiting for you online. listen.sdpb.org. And Hugh is with us every Tuesday at this time. So tune in for that and more. Find the podcast wherever you download your podcast. Hugh, thank you so much for being here with us once again. Always a pleasure. And thanks to the kids, too. I've forgotten their names, but thank you to them.
Yeah, they were fantastic. Thank you.